I'd like to take a few minutes today to address an issue which is coming up from time to time and which is most certainly an important one when it comes to not just the world at large, but also, and perhaps even more so, the Church of God at large. In a moment you will see what I am trying to get at, but I want to start with update number 1046. Which you should all have received. It has an editorial by the one person whom you have just seen doing the song service, the hymnal service, Michael Link. He wrote about the parable of the talents. And so he has some interesting points which he brings out. And of course, he also points out the importance that we use our talents, which we have been given, physical talents, and of course also spiritual talents. The current events go into many different things. I'd just like to highlight the accusations by Boris Johnson against France, Germany, and Italy pertaining to Ukraine. And frankly, looking at the events, I have no reason to doubt that what Mr. Johnson is saying now is correct. In fact, in the next update, we will have some lengthy articles about something which just happened on Friday. It shows the rift. It shows the situation between the United States of America and Europe reaching a point where I believe prophecy is being fulfilled or in the process of being fulfilled. And I don't want to go too much into this now because I intend to give a standing watch and an Aufpostenstehen about that, because it is so critically important that we understand and know what is happening. Of course, we did have a new standing watch. Of course, it goes first into the mass murder in Colorado Springs, but it was just the introduction, if you please, for something which I really wanted to get across. And in the subscription or the concept as to what we have been talking about, the summary, we are asking the question, could our society's approach towards violence have any role to play? And what does God tell us what the only true solution is? Now, this issue is plaguing us from time to time, and of course, after the mass shooting in Colorado, there was another one at a Walmart store, apparently a disgruntled employee, perhaps a manager, shot several people before he killed himself. And so you hear these episodes time and again. Of course, you don't need firearms. I mean, you have the situation in Idaho where somebody is just taking a knife and killing several students. But, you know, violence is something which we are so much introduced to that it doesn't look like we are giving it a second thought. Now, I like to go back to the time in the Worldwide Church of God when I was giving speeches in Spokesman Club, in Graduate Club here at Ambassador College. And I gave several speeches attacking war. In fact, my attack speech was an attack on war. But I also gave a speech about whether church members will fight in war. And I pointed out that in the book of Revelation, there are, of course, seven church eras listed. The last one, the Laodicean era, seems to very strongly suggest that church members will actually and literally fight in war. I said that at the time when Mr. Armstrong was still alive, and I was quite attacked in the evaluation. Oh, what are you talking about? Church members would never pick up a gun, would never pick up a weapon to fight against others. Are you saying that that is going to happen? And I just said, yes, that's what I'm saying. Of course, Mr. Armstrong died. A new administration took over. And one of the first things the new administration was doing was claiming that there are righteous wars, and that we as Christians even have a duty in certain circumstances to fight in war. And World War II was always given as an example, like an American had the duty to fight against the forces of evil in Germany. So now it's not so much a surprise anymore that many people, I hope not too many, are feeling like war under certain circumstances is justified, violence under certain circumstances is justified. I was not surprised that I got a response to the Standing Watch program by somebody claiming to be in the church, saying it doesn't agree with what I was saying, because yes, you have to pick up a weapon. You have to fight against when you're being attacked. You have to participate in a preemptive war, and so on. It goes, and I talked to him a little bit via email about his wrong approach, and also reminded him that Mr. Armstrong very clearly taught the opposite. Now, most people in the church apparently don't even know this. Mr. Armstrong wrote a booklet, Military Service and War. And of course, we in the legal department used that quite a bit when we had to defend those who were fighting for conscientious objection. And in the booklet, he said very clearly, David sinned when he fought in war. Israel sinned when they fought in war. We, of course, today would sin when we pick up a weapon, a sword, to fight against others. Now, in this one speech I talked about, I quoted that particular statement of Mr. Armstrong in his booklet, and people didn't know anything about it. They had no clue that Mr. Armstrong has ever written that. But I still have copies of that booklet, in case you wonder. That was a clear-cut teaching by Mr. Armstrong in the Worldwide Church of God. But then there were some, including some evangelists, who had already under him a different approach, writing things which were not in conformity with what the official church teaching was. And so it's not a surprise that even when Mr. Armstrong was still alive, one group which had separated from the Worldwide Church of God was already preaching and teaching that it is a duty of a Christian to fight in war. A group which claims to be part of the body of Christ. And today they're going to be more, and they're going to be more, and they're going to be more. And so it is extremely important that we get that straight in our minds. There's never, ever, ever the justification for anyone to fight in war fought by human beings, that is, under any circumstance. Unless we totally and clearly understand that, we will have violence. And violence will increase. And violence breeds more violence. And war breeds more war. Why is it that in the millennium, when Jesus Christ is ruling this earth, people will not want to learn war anymore? They will take their weapons and change them into tools of agriculture, useful tools. Why is that? If there's nothing wrong with fighting in war. Well, it has to come from the Spirit, as I say in the Standing Watch program, when we want to save the flesh, and when we want to understand that our whole approach towards society, towards war, is wrong. Unless we understand that, we'll have war. We'll have more and more incidents like this. And then we say, oh, we have to meet this violence with more violence. And people come up with all kinds of solutions as to what to do and what not to do. And none of that is the right solution. None of that is the right choice. So I wanted to bring that up insofar as the Standing Watch program is concerned. But then I also want to bring up some other things. Because I'm not saying now that this is what's going to happen. But I'm saying now that this could happen. And have you heard about the potential railroad strike looming on the horizon? Talking about this country. Here's an article by Breitbart, dated November 23. And it says, a national freight rail strike is viewed as increasingly inevitable, as four rail worker labor unions have rejected a tentative agreement with rail companies. A strike could take effect early next month, and some say by December 5, others by December 9. Congressional intervention would become increasingly likely. The article goes on to say that rail companies have estimated that some $2 billion daily, now figure that amount, $2 billion daily, would bleed from the American economy during a strike. Railroads haul about 40% of the nation's freight each year. If a strike drags on for a month, some 700,000 jobs would be lost. 467,000 additional trucks a day would be needed to handle everything railroad deliver. PBS and the Associated Press wrote on November 22, many businesses only have a few days' worth of raw materials and space for finished goods. Makers of food, fuel, cars, and chemicals would all feel the squeeze, as would their customers. That's not to mention the commuters who would be left stranded because many passenger railroads use tracks owned by the freight railroads. Chemical manufacturers and refineries will be some of the first businesses affected because railroads will stop shipping hazardous chemicals about a week before the strike deadline to ensure that no tank cars filled with dangerous liquids wind up stranded. Not a surprise, consumers will also pay more for gasoline if refineries shut down, either because they can't get the ingredients they need to make fuel or because railroads aren't available to haul away byproducts like sulfur. It would take about a week for customers to notice shortages of things like cereal, peanut butter, and beer at the grocery store, and others then add barley and other finished products. Those companies typically keep only 2 to 4 days worth of raw ingredients on hand because it's expensive to store them. And grocers also keep a limited supply of products on hand. Any disruption in rail service could threaten the health of chickens and pigs, which depend on trains to deliver their feed and contribute to higher meat prices. A rail strike would work or would hit pork and chicken. Let me read this again. A rail strike now would hit pork and chicken producers in the southern U.S. hardest because their local supply of corn and soybeans from the year's harvest is likely exhausted, and they'd have to ship feed by truck, dramatically increasing costs. Shippers like FedEx and UPS use rail cars that hold roughly 2,000 packages to each car. And then it says, drivers are already paying record prices and often waiting months for new vehicles because of the production problems in the auto industry related to the shortage of computer chips in recent years. That would only get worse if there is a rail strike, because roughly 75% of all new vehicles begin their journey from factories to dealerships on the railroad. Trains deliver some 2,000 carloads a day filled with vehicles. I'm reading this just to show you how everything is connected. Even a railroad strike could bring this country to an absolute economic disaster unless Congress intervenes, which they have done, as I will tell you in a moment. But that poses all kinds of problems too. The prospect, wrote on November 23, Congress could end talk about strikes and worker lockouts by passing a joint resolution under the Railway Labor Act of 1926. Which is then sent to President Biden's desk. If he signs, the resolution could force workers to accept the contract approved by the Presidential Emergency Board, the board set up by the president to mandate and mediate the dispute. If that happens, it would run counter, and here we go, to Biden's repeated commitment to being the most pro-union administration in American history. Earlier this month, Labor Secretary Marty Walsh said that without an approved contract, he expected Congress to step in. The prospect also reached out to Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Majority Whip Jim Clyburn, Senate Leader Chuck Schumer, and Senator Bernie Sanders, and the White House for comment on whether or not Congress would intervene between collective bargaining negotiations. Schumer's office said they did not have a statement ready at the moment. Meanwhile, the others didn't respond. But especially Bernie Sanders had mentioned in the past that he absolutely wants the labor unions to work out a deal for their workers. Now, let's go back to history. I had to look at that myself. Didn't know too much about it, but I thought the following is quite interesting. Because did we have railroad strikes before? We sure did. It says, the great railroad strike of 1877 led to John Carroll's order to the National Guard to put down the strike. Baltimoreans attacked the troops. Street battles between the striking workers and the Maryland militia left 10 dead and 25 wounded. By the end of August 1877, the strike had ended primarily due to federal government intervention, the use of state militias, and the employment of strike breakers by the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad Company. Now, this was 1877. Let's go to 1922. Launched on July 1, 1922, by 7 of the 16 railroad labor organizations in existence at the time, the strike continued into the month of August before collapsing. A sweeping judicial injunction by Judge James Herbert Wilkinson effectively brought the strike to an end on September 1, 1922. Now, then we go to 1992. This is now after this Railway Labor Act of 1926 was enacted. So what happened in 1992? That strike lasted 2 days before Congress intervened. The Los Angeles Times reported at that time on June 26, 1992. Congress and the White House moved with rare speed Thursday night to end a crippling 2-day nationwide rail shutdown that already had begun to threaten the economy by forcing layoffs at coal mines and auto assembly plants. The House and Senate passed emergency legislation barring strikes and lockouts by large margins. Bush, the old ancient Mr. Bush Sr., signed the legislation early today. Many lawmakers objected strongly that the action was anti-labor, but anxiety about the impact of a prolonged stoppage on the still fragile economy overrode those concerns. That was 1992. Today, it's much worse. Our economy is already pretty much hitting bottom. So, three questions. Are they going to still able to come to a good solution regarding how to do this and how to deal with the whole situation? It doesn't appear that way. It doesn't appear that the labor unions will actually approve the contract which was given to them, the proposal, by Mr. Biden. So the second one, if nothing happens, if we have a full-fledged strike, which will have terrible consequences for the economy. The third option, Congress intervenes. In other words, both the Republicans and the Democrats agree that this has to stop, like it happened in 1992. So they agree on stopping this strike before it starts, maybe, or even after it has started, sending it to Biden, and Biden is signing it. In doing that, two things will happen. The first one is the labor unions will be as upset as you can only imagine. Now, the labor unions are those who are actually voting mostly for Democrats. They will be extremely upset. But also the left-wing socialist portion of the Democrats will be extremely upset. And that may divide the Democrats even further. So we have to wait and see how this is going to play out. But, you know, again, it's interesting that we haven't really heard that much about this. What seems to be a tremendously important situation. And all I can say is, insofar as we are concerned, let's buy what you can now. Let's have in storage what you can have, which is, of course, durable. Make sure, like you have in case of an earthquake or in case of a power outage, you have stuff in your home, because who is to say what is going to happen comes December 5 or December 9, whatever the deadline will be. There could be all kinds of repercussions. There could be turmoil, like it happened in 1877, or it could be an intervention by Congress, which will not make many Americans very happy. At the same time, they say, oh, well, they have to do something because, you know, we cannot allow the economy to go down even further. So it's quite an interesting situation. So you might want to pay attention to that, and you may do whatever precautions you can do to, you know, do something about it. Going back, not when it comes to the negotiations, when it comes to your own personal private life, making sure that you have enough in your home so that you have something to eat, something to drink, if that should happen. Going back to the update and the other articles on the current events, I'm not going to go too much into those. You can read them for yourself. But there is something in there about what Israel is planning of doing. And yesterday, again, this was enlarged in that this one guy, whom nobody outside Israel seems to like too much, was now made the Minister of Security, who is in charge of the police, who is in charge of the Temple Mount. And it's going to be up to him what he is going to do when the Jews will want to pray on the Temple Mount. He's one who is supporting this. And as we said in a recent Standing Watch program, he is the one who supports the building of the Third Temple. So again, we have to watch this a little bit more closely because things can transpire quite quickly in the way that God, of course, is the one who is directing it all and allowing it and making sure that it's going to be in accordance with his plan.